All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Lawrence B. Hagel presiding. All of the business before this court draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Morning. I hope you all enjoy the renovated courtroom. We are lucky to be the first for this argument. We have today the case of Petitti versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Who will speak for Mr. Petitti?
Michael Jost of the law firm Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick, representing the appellant, and to my left, Landon Overby, also of the firm.
Thank you very much. And who will speak for the Secretary?
Britt Boker of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Office of General Counsel, and with me is Ken Walsh, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. And it appears that you've reserved 10 minutes, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Please begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Mr. Petitti is service-connected for a disability that affects joints throughout his body. The Board made a favorable finding of fact that the veteran's joints are painful. Pursuant to Section 4.59, a compensable rating is warranted for each joint afflicted by pain. The Board misinterpreted Section 4.59 when it denied the veteran a compensable rating for each joint pursuant to that regulation. It misinterpreted the regulation by requiring objective evidence of pain on movement, as well as objective evidence of limitation of motion. And it further misinterpreted the regulation by ignoring the veteran's reports of pain with use that the Board deemed him competent and credible to report.
Let me just clarify something, Counsel. Are you trying to avail yourself of 4.59 by going through the chronic residuals portion of DC 5002?
Yes, essentially.
Okay.
As this court held in Lichtenfels, 4.59 is read in conjunction with, in that case, Diagnostic Code 5003. 5002 and 5003 are both, for all intents and purposes, the same. They're analogous, and they both have the same portion related to chronic residuals.
And so you're trying to use the first sentence of the chronic residuals part of DC 5002?
Correct. And that portion of 5002 is virtually the same as the mandate set forth in 4.59. Read together, it provides for a compensable rating for a joint manifested by pain.
And so the benefit of using that sentence over the second sentence there of the chronic residuals part of 5002 is that each joint, whether it's minor or major, or whether it's a group of minors, mm-hmm. you're saying each joint would get at least a compensable eval.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Petitti has arthritis in his hands.
Yes.
It seemed to affect his wrists and hands quite a bit. How many joints are there in the hand?
Several. It's a group. Including
the fingers.
Yes, correct. So that would be a group of minor joints. In Mr. Petitti's case, he has pain in his wrists specifically. So wrists, elbows, shoulders, hips, spine.
So you would use the language of the second part of the chronic residuals part of DC 5002, which talks about major joints or group of minor joints?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're not arguing that he would get, I think there's something like 14 joints in each
yes.
hand.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's at a minimum.
Yes, Your Honor. So the veteran would not be entitled to a separate rating for each minor joint in the hand, in other words. If he has pain in his wrist, then you would look to the diagnostic codes for the wrist, for example, 5214 through 5230, and as long as a compensable rating is warranted for the wrist, then the veteran would be entitled to a compensable rating.
Okay. Taking a similar question on that issue, so it's your position that the veteran does not have an active process under 5002?
The veteran has rheumatoid arthritis under 5002, so and he suffers from chronic residuals manifested by painful motion, pain on use in all of the afflicted joints.
So has there been a finding that his RA is not in an active process?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. Here, there has been a favorable finding by the board, in addition to the supporting medical and lay evidence, that the veteran suffers from chronic residuals, which under 5002 would the veteran would be allowed to have those chronic residuals rated, as discussed previously by Judge Bartley, for each major joint afflicted by pain.
In looking at the two sections we're talking about, 5002 and 4.59, 5002 talks about the limitation of motion. 4.59 talks about painful motion. The as I understand the facts here, Mr. Petiti does not have any impairment of motion, nor does he have any painful motion. So how is it that 4.9 applies when actually the heading of it, of that section, is painful motion?
Well, in this case, the veteran does have pain on use of the joints.
He doesn't have painful motion. I mean, that's the facts are, the doctor said, and there are no countervailing facts, that he does not have pain and doesn't display any outward objective evidence of pain when he moves his hands, in this case, wrists, and so forth. And so I'm having a difficult time reconciling those two regulations when one is specifically focused on painful motion. And in fact, you know, 5002 also talks about limitation of motion in as far as residuals are concerned. Please explain that.
I would answer that in two parts. First, as discussed in 5002, limitation of motion could be confirmed by such things as swelling, which the board again made a favorable finding of fact that that the veteran does experience swelling. There was also objective evidence of synovitis, which is swelling of the joint lining. But 5002 also states or satisfactory evidence of painful motion.
But again, there's no evidence of painful motion.
The board's credibility finding that the veteran does experience painful motion is satisfactory evidence of painful motion. The medical examinations are limited insofar as the examiner stated there was
where in the board decision does the board find that there is painful motion?
At record site 16, the board made a favorable finding that the veteran experiences pain, stiffness, swelling of the hands, feet, ankles, elbows, etc., in addition to objective evidence of stiffness, gelling, tenderness, and the synovitis. And the board on record site 19, page 17 of the board decision, states, there is no doubt pain exists that is daily and causes fatigue and stiffness.
I didn't hear the word motion in any of those words that you indicated. And we know that pain alone is not a reason for granting disability compensation, correct?
Correct. And the veteran here has pain on use, which is synonymous with painful motion.
Again, where does it say that? I heard swelling. I heard the other things that you mentioned, and that we all agree occur.
And the board's favorable findings were derived from the evidence of record, which discusses the veteran's inability to grasp, difficulty walking, joint stiffened bed, and it inhibits his ability to get out of bed. The examiners have made findings that the pain in the joints cause decreased mobility, decreased manual dexterity, and lack of stamina. So all of that does constitute painful motion or pain on use.
So do you concede that there must be painful motion, not just pain?
For purposes of 4.59, the regulation states actually painful joints, but for our purposes, the court does not need to reach the question in this case as to whether just pain at rest, in other words, is sufficient in and of itself to warrant a compensable rating, because in this case we do have pain on use of the joints.
But it's true that if an individual has RA and I don't know that anyone would disagree that it causes chronic pain in the joints, that you would have that pain whether you were moving or at rest. Would you agree with that statement?
Yes, I would, Your Honor.
Okay.
You talked about requiring or not requiring objective measures of or determinations of the painful motion. Should we read this regulation as requiring objective evidence?
No, Your Honor. Nowhere in the regulation does it state that that objective evidence of painful motion, for example, during active non-weight-bearing testing during a VA examination, is required for the board to conclude that the veteran experiences painful motion in those joints with use.
The regulation does talk about assessing painful or wincing, facial expressions, muscle spasms. So is it your position that a layperson could report those, or how would the board make this determination?
Certainly objective evidence, for example, during range of motion testing on examination, would be sufficient under the regulation to warrant a compensable rating. Essentially, the wincing, any sort of facial expressions, those are all subjective. If so long as a veteran is deemed competent and credible to report to an examiner or report to the board, that they experience pain on use and the board finds them credible, then that should be sufficient. Essentially, it's a third-party confirmation that the veteran experiences pain on use. And that's consistent with the court's case law, the court's decision in Buchanan, 1154, Kahana, Jandro. The court has made clear that lay evidence could be sufficient in and of itself, again, so long as it is deemed credible.
What about if we have to read a regulation of a diagnostic code in concert with 4.59, like I think 5003, talks about objective evidence. Yeah, limitation on motion must be objectively confirmed by findings. So if that diagnostic code required objective evidence, would that requirement extend into the painful motion?
Well, 5002 and 5003 both state or satisfactory evidence of painful motion. So reading that line in the disjunctive, satisfactory evidence of painful motion could be anything confirmed by the board or even a medical examination. The medical examiners did note that the veteran experiences pain with activity in the joints. So absent a finding by the examiners that the veteran was malingering or for some reason his reports were grossly inconsistent with their findings and their reasonable determinations as a medical examiner, then that evidence within the medical examinations should also be deemed satisfactory evidence of painful motion.
In this case, do you think we have enough to find that there is painful motion, or do we need to send it back for an exam or for the board to decide if swelling is painful motion?
Yeah. Well, under the Diagnostic Code 5002, it specifically mentions swelling as something that is sufficient to constitute limitation of motion in the joint. And in this case, the board has already made a favorable finding that the veteran experiences swelling amongst the other symptoms I mentioned before, in addition to the objective evidence of synovitis, which is a condition characterized by a swelling of the joint lining. So in this case, the medical evidence and lay evidence together is already sufficient to make a finding that the veteran is entitled to a compensable rating for each joint.
Go ahead.
And so a further examination would not be required.
Well, you're pointing to language in 5003 that refers to limitation of motion. If we were to take you up on that argument to say, okay, he has swelling, therefore he has limitation of motion, therefore he qualifies under 5003, we don't even need to talk about 4.59.
And again, it's quite analogous to the court's decision in Lichtenfels, where the court stated that 4.59 was read in conjunction with 5003 in that case, and also 5002 in the case at hand.
But if swelling is limitation of motion for 5003, why do we need 4.59? What does it add?
Certainly, the veteran, I think, in either route, whether it's you just look purely at the diagnostic code 5002, then that would be another avenue. But 4.59 is not in and of itself a freestanding avenue of compensation. So in other words, a veteran, if they have painful motion, is not awarded a compensable rating under 4.59. 4.59 is read in conjunction with the diagnostic codes, in addition to the 5002 in this case, in addition to the specific diagnostic criteria for each joint at issue.
But let's just clarify, you're not recommending that we take the 5003 route, are you? And wouldn't that be somewhat problematic, given that he actually has rheumatoid arthritis and the appropriate diagnostic code appears to be 5002?
No, 5002 says swelling right there. That's what I was talking about.
Oh, sorry.
I may have misspoken.
No, that's what, and they both have the same language. So in Lichtenfels, the court was dealing in that case with 5003. In this case, we are dealing with 5002. They both contain the same language as far as swelling.
Well, the sentence that much of the argument has revolved around is the fifth sentence of assuming that you can get to 4.59 via the first sentence of the chronic residuals part of DC 5002. The fifth sentence, which is, it is the intention to actually recognize painful, unstable, or malaligned joints due to healed injury as entitled to at least the minimum compensable rating for the joint. The Secretary raised the issue that with regard to the due to healed injury part of this, and I believe was saying that the Veterans RA would not qualify under that language. What's your response?
Lichtenfels would control on that point. The court in that case held that 4.59 was applicable to Diagnostic Code 5003, which, again, as we discussed earlier, is for arthritis as a disease process. It did not limit the application of 4.59 to Diagnostic Code 5010, which is for arthritis strictly of a traumatic origin. And that's also consistent with the Secretary's longstanding interpretation of the regulation and its applicability.
Can you go into a little more detail about the Secretary's longstanding?
Yes, Your Honor. In GC Presidential Opinion 9-98, the question was specifically asked, is 4.59 applicable to degenerative arthritis or traumatic arthritis? And the response was in the affirmative. 4.59 is applicable to both cases of degenerative arthritis or traumatic arthritis. And although in this case we are dealing with rheumatoid arthritis, both rheumatoid arthritis and degenerative arthritis are disease processes that are not, and then traumatic arthritis is something separate, arthritis as a result of a traumatic injury.
But did 9.98 discuss the fifth sentence in particular, or was it just saying that 4.59 in general would apply to a degenerative condition?
Yes, yes, Your Honor. That 4.59 is applicable to...
In general, but not that did not discuss the fifth sentence allowing a minimum 10%.
Yes, Your Honor. It was pursuant to that aspect of the regulation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it your position that, I know we're out of time, that the only rating that he would get for each joint system is the minimal rating for that joint system?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
It would be the minimum compensable rating for that joint.
Okay. In very briefly, explain to me why including 4.59 in your analysis gives Mr. Petiti a greater rating.
Currently, the veteran has a single disability rating for his rheumatoid arthritis.
Under 5002.
Yes, Your Honor. So by rating the veteran for the chronic residuals
on each of them,
for each individual joint, his combined rating would be in excess of his current single rating of 40%.
Okay, thank you.
If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
May it please the court, the secretary respectfully asserts that the rating under Diagnostic Code 5002 was appropriate in this case, and because Mr. Petiti does not have objective evidence of painful motion, even when reading Diagnostic Code 5002 in concert with Regulation 4.59, he's not entitled to separate compensable ratings for chronic residuals for each of his joints, because the medical evidence states that he does not have painful motion in this case, Your Honors. To the extent that appellant is arguing that there is some subjective evidence of pain. The Secretary and the Board did not dispute that there was evidence of pain, but the Board found that that was an active process pain, and that when the examiner looked for objective evidence of painful motion, there was none in this case, Your Honors.
Well, then is it the Secretary's position that the fact that there is swelling and other incidents of each joint causing pain, that that is not compensable at all?
No, Your Honor, it's not the Secretary's position that that is not compensable at all, but it's the Secretary's position that in the absence of documented painful motion, that the 40% rating that he receives as an active process adequately compensates him for that, for the swelling and the more static pain that he has.
Can you point to language in 5002 that would support your position?
Yes, Your Honor. For chronic residuals, it requires limitation of motion that is objectively confirmed by findings such as swelling, muscle spasm, or satisfactory evidence of painful motion. And in this case, when the examiner did range of motion testing, the examiner found that there was no limitation of motion and that there was no objective evidence of painful motion. So upon examination, he did not meet the findings that would entitle him to the separate ratings for chronic residuals under that diagnostic code.
But didn't he say that the veteran had swelling? And swelling is one of the listed criteria.
But the swelling did not produce any limitation of motion on testing in that case. So there was.
Wouldn't limitation of motion all by itself be limitation of motion? Why do you need swelling to show that the motion is limited? It seems to me like that's an indication of something else. A muscle spasm doesn't limit your motion. It's an indication of something else, right?
I suppose the answer is that swelling can produce limitation of motion, but it does not always produce limitation of motion, because when he was tested in this case, it did not.
No. Well, didn't the board find that that there's no doubt pain exists that is daily and causes fatigue and stiffness? No. What is stiff? I mean, I didn't look it up. I'm just wondering how we would explain it and whether it would equate to limitation of motion in some respect.
I believe, Your Honor, it's explained more by Mr. Petit's statements regarding how his pain affects him. He states on page 35 of the record that when he sits down, his joints swell up and they begin to ache. So it appears to be, as a factual matter in this case, that it's actually lack of movement that causes the swelling and the aching for Mr. Petit. In the 2007 VA exam, Your Honor, the examiner said that pain is alleviated by activity. This is on page 1367 of the record. So I suppose that his form of rheumatoid arthritis, based on the medical evidence and his statements that we have, is one that creates a situation that may, to the lay person, be counterintuitive in that it is painful, but there is no painful motion.
And why did the secretary agree to a joint motion to remand to consider 4.59 titled painful motion if there was no painful motion in the record at that time?
Because the joint motion for remand uses the words that the section 4.59 is potentially applicable, and that is based on this court's case law. There will be occasions when the board makes factual findings and applies it to a regulation that the secretary or this court has deemed to be potentially applicable, Your Honor, that it turns out that the regulation will in fact not apply.
I'd like to shift a little bit to some of the responses to our briefing order, please. One of the things we discussed with your opposing counsel about limiting 4.59's fifth sentence to healed injuries.
Yes,
is it still your position that it's limited to healed injuries? as opposed to a disease process?
We don't believe that 4.59 is limited to healed injuries in and of itself. The way we were phrasing the argument was in response to what we perceived to be his argument is that in, from his briefing, which basically we perceived to be lifting that one sentence out of 4.59 and reading it out of context to say it provides some sort of independent rating. And after listening to him argue his side of the case, I understand that's not his position. But we were trying to argue, based on what the board had found, that if you lift that sentence out, his argument wouldn't make any sense because he has a healed injury. I mean, he does not have a healed injury, he has an active disease process. But we, it's our position that 4.59, when read as a whole, when combined with the diagnostic codes, does provide for compensable ratings for non-compensable motion that is painful. But we were disagreeing with what we perceived to be his argument, which was that that sentence provides a compensable rating for a static pain that does not involve range of motion.
Okay, so just to make sure I know what you're saying. If there is painful motion,
yes,
it doesn't matter what the cause of the painful motion is, if it's a disease or a healed injury.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and either circumstance would result in the veteran being eligible for a minimum compensable rating.
Yes, Your Honor. In that regard, 5002 has very similar language to 5003, which under Lichtenfeld's, the court stated if there is painful motion, you would get a 10% rating. And that is the Secretary's view of 5002 as well.
And does it apply to diagnostic codes that have no specific requirement for limitation of motion as well as those that do?
I will state that with regards to that question where we listed the diagnostic codes, we were attempting to come up with a comprehensive list, and I will say that's not exclusive. We have run into cases since then where there was evidence of painful motion. I believe the specific one that one of my colleagues had was a Bunion-Hallis valgus case. That diagnostic code does not specifically mention painful motion, and so I apologize if the list was incomplete. We were trying to, there was not a list. We were trying to make a judgment on which of these diagnostic codes applied. So there could be instances where painful motion could be relevant for a compensable rating based on the facts of the case if it's not specifically listed in the diagnostic code, Your Honor.
Excuse me one minute.
Yes.
Can the people in the back hear counsel? Okay. Great.
I apologize if I'm not speaking.
No, we're just testing the new system. You can hear us rustling really well, so we don't know if they can hear you. When we look at the minimum compensable rating for the joint, as Judge Bartley was talking about, there's at least 14 joints in a hand. If a lot of them provided a zero rating and one provided a 10% rating as the minimum compensable rating, could you look at different diagnostic codes that would be applicable to those joints, or is it very limited to the individual diagnostic code that's most applicable to that?
I believe, Your Honor, it would be the one that's most applicable to the disability in question, but that would probably be a very fact-specific case-by-case determination, and it's possible in the case of an unlisted disability that there would be a hyphenation and you would go by analogy back to a range of motion 5003, 5002, or a diagnostic code of that nature, Your Honor.
Let me go back and ask you a question that I asked Mr. Petitti's counsel, and that is, so Mr. Petitti has rheumatoid arthritis. He has painful joints whenever I say all of the time, I mean, like, basically all of the time. That's like the characteristic of the condition, a characteristic of the condition. I hope I'm not speaking you know, I'm not citing to anything here, but I think we'd all agree that, you know, it's painful joints. So, if he doesn't have any additional pain on movement, but he continues to have the chronic residual pain that RA causes, would that be sufficient to pull him in under 4.59 as experiencing painful motion, even though his pain is not limited to motion? It actually perhaps occurs even when he's at rest.
Your Honor, hypothetically speaking, if someone had pain all the time, and including on motion, even if the pain did not get worse upon motion, if there was objective evidence of it, that person would get a rating. But the Secretary does not agree with the characterization of Mr. Petit's as producing pain all the time, including on motion, because the medical evidence doesn't support that finding in our view.
Okay, well, would you agree that the exams are a bit inconsistent on that? That although when doing findings with the goniometer, apparently the examiner said no, it might have said no pain on motion, or no limitation of motion due to pain or something like that, but then also expressed that the veteran complained of pain in both shoulders, elbows, wrists, knees, hand joints, and feet. I mean, he said that the veteran's complaining of this, but then whenever he did the testing. So is that at all inconsistent?
I think, Your Honor, it would be just subjective complaints of pain versus the objective evidence that was from the test results. I don't know enough about the mechanics of rheumatoid arthritis to know whether that's inconsistent at all with how rheumatoid arthritis works. I will just state that the one examiner from 2007 did say the pain was alleviated by movement. So it seems to be, in Mr. Petit's case, something that happens with his rheumatoid arthritis is that it's worse when he's still.
And what about appellant's argument that the last sentence of the chronic residuals part of DC 5002, which says LOM must be objectively confirmed by findings such as swelling, muscle spasm, or satisfactory evidence of painful motion, and that the veteran's lay statements qualify as satisfactory evidence of painful motion?
We would disagree that the lay evidence is sufficient to qualify as satisfactory evidence of painful motion. I think that sentence, when read as a whole, the last sentence on Diagnostic Code 5002, requires some objective confirmation from the doctors. And I would also refer, Your Honor, to Diagnostic Code 4.40, which describes functional loss due to pain, and it says that when functional loss is due to pain, it must be supported by adequate pathology and evidenced by visible behavior of claimant undertaking the motion. So the Secretary reads that regulation also in concert with Diagnostic Code 5002 and believes that there must be some sort of objective evidence of painful motion to obtain that rating.
So the requirement comes from the Diagnostic Code 5002, not from 4.59.
4.59 doesn't speak specifically to whether the evidence can be objective or subjective, although it does refer to testing, which I think suggests some objective testing would be done, but it doesn't specifically state. But the Secretary believes, Your Honor, that all the diagnostic codes are relevant. All the 4.40 and 4.59 are relevant to the diagnostic code.
You talk about the testing that 4.59 references, and both parties, I think, agreed that the examinations of record don't comply, for want of a better word, with the testing that's referenced in 4.59. Is that correct?
We would agree that the the exams appear to have only done active non-weight-bearing range of motion testing. Though they specifically reference active, it's likely that it was only non-weight-bearing range of motion testing. Yes, so we would agree that that was not strictly adhered to. We believe that given the repetitive testing and the statements from the compensation service stating that three repetitions are sufficient for functional loss due to pain and range of motion testing, that these exams were substantially compliant with the regulation.
If an exam did not meet that criteria, if we were to find that it wasn't substantially compliant, would we have to remand to send it back for a better exam?
I think in the, yes, likely. Yes. There is an issue with the passive. In the Secretary's view, passive is when the doctor moves your arms. It's really unclear if he can do active range of motion by himself, if anything else would be gained by passive range of motion testing, considering he's able to move all his joints by himself without pain, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, you said he's able to move his joints without pain?
Sorry, Your Honor. Yes, I was referring to the 2011 range of motion testing. Mm-hmm. The examiner specifically stated that was active range of motion, which means that the veteran moved his joints himself, Your Honor. Passive range of motion referred to in 4.59 would be the doctor manipulating your joints to move them. So the Secretary just is asserting that it would unclear that there would be any benefit of doing passive range of motion testing for him when he had no range of motion loss and he had no painful motion upon the active testing. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, the Secretary rests his case and respectfully requests that the Court affirm the Board's decision. Oh, I'm sorry, Judge Brown.
Okay.
If I may comment on the line of questioning pertaining to the active versus passive range of motion testing, I would respectfully disagree that nothing further could be ascertained from passive range of motion testing. As opposing counsel pointed out, active range of motion testing is without any assistance. Passive range of motion with manipulation by an examiner could ascertain a greater range of motion by the exertion of external force to the joint. And certainly the exertion of external force on the joint by physical manipulation could produce pain.
Is there a minimum range of motion that's prescribed by the regulation, either 30 degrees, 40 degrees, 10 degrees?
No, Your Honor. And this is something that was addressed in Mitchell or highlighted in Mitchell, that once you move past just the pure threshold of pain, then that's when you get into pain and functional loss under the specific applicable diagnostic codes to ascertain where on the range of motion scale the appropriate rating would be assigned. But for purposes of 4.59, eliciting pain on motion or pain on use in and of itself is sufficient to warrant a compensable rating. In addition, the regulation...
I want to go back to this pain on use. Where do we have pain on use?
The veteran in this case has difficulty grasping objects with his hands. The joints stiffen up, which compromises his ability to walk, to sit, stand, writing. He has decreased mobility.
I didn't hear pain, as I said before. I still didn't hear pain in all that.
Pain is...
Or limitation of motion.
just that he has difficulty doing it.
Yeah. The veteran has asserted that it's the pain that produces his difficulty with standing, walking, writing, etc. And again, that's been a favorable finding of fact set forth by the board in this case. The board again said that there is no doubt that pain exists daily, which produces the fatigue and the stiffness, etc. If I may circle back also to the weight-bearing aspect of the regulation, certainly there's a difference between testing motion and whether or not there is pain on non-weight-bearing motion versus weight-bearing motion. As conceded by opposing counsel, that is not something that is tested for by the examiners. So as it stands now, the only way for the board to ascertain whether there is pain during weight-bearing motion, so walking, for example, is from the veteran's lay statements. If the veteran states, you know, my hips hurt or my back hurts whenever I walk or navigate stairs, for example, then the board finds the veteran credible to report that pain, then that should be sufficient in and of itself.
Is a layperson capable of attributing the pain that they experience to the joint process in question? So, you know, it's like my back hurts. Is it because of my hips or is it because of my back? Or, you know, things like that. So is that something a veteran could actually do, or would a doctor be needed to link those things together?
I certainly believe that pain in a joint, whether it's the back or the hips, is certainly something capable of lay observation, and that is consistent with this court's case law.
I'd like to go back to a question I asked before, and it was highlighted to me again. Mr. Petiti is rated right now 40% for active disease process. So how do we then shift him into chronic residuals if he is having active disease?
Again, I would submit that the veteran at this point is experiencing chronic residuals of his rheumatoid arthritis. At that point, as soon as the veteran is just simply experiencing chronic residuals, the pain on movement that we've discussed, or the actually painful joints, then at that point, it would be conducive to rate him under the chronic residuals portion. In addition, it is the intent to afford the veteran the maximum rate allowable under the law pursuant to AB v. Brown. And in this case, as discussed with Judge Hagel earlier, rating the veteran individually for his chronic residuals would afford Mr. Petiti a higher overall combined disability rating.
I just want to make sure I understand your take on the passive testing. So counsel for the secretary essentially said that the passive testing, passive range of motion testing, wouldn't do anything more, in essence, because the veteran has already been able to undertake the motion himself. And your point is that passive testing could give us further information, you said, because there's an external force acting on the joint and pushing it, and you were saying that might cause more pain or limit motion would be limited more or further?
Yes, Your Honor.
Upon the passive testing?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. If during active testing, they're only ascertaining to what degree the veteran is able to, on their own, move the joint. But with passive range of motion, the examiner would apply external force to essentially, for example, elicit, see just how far the joint could be pushed before the veteran starts experiencing something like pain. So perhaps a veteran, for example, would only be able to actively flex their spine, their lumbar spine, to 50%. But then with the exertion of external force, the examiner would be able to manipulate the veteran's spine a bit further to, say, 40%. And perhaps at that point, with the exertion of some external force, it would elicit pain on motion.
So you're saying the range of motion might be greater, but any repetitive testing might be worse?
Well, again, I believe that the repetitive testing would be required in both the active and passive range.
Yeah, but you just seem to admit that the range of motion would be a greater range of motion than on active testing.
Yes, and the question, and this goes back to something that Judge Hagel had mentioned earlier. When we're dealing with 4.59, the question is just simply, is there pain on motion? So the degrees of range of motion, even if the veteran during passive motion were to have a greater degree of flexion, so long as there is pain at that point on the motion, that would be sufficient in and of itself for the minimum compensable rating for the joint.
At what point, trying to think about this, of course, there's a limitation on what we can find as a matter of fact and medical fact, but if I were to take my fingers, for example, and pull them as hard as I could, eventually there would be pain, right?
Yes, sir.
If the doctor says there's no limitation of motion, don't we have to take that as a medical finding that, in fact, there isn't within the normal range of, don't we have to imply or understand that within that statement, the doctor's making a statement within the individual's normal range of movement?
In active non-weight bearing, yes. To the extent that I'm able to comment on medical testing and range of motion, I would assume that the reasonable testing by medical examiners in passive range of motion is not to push a joint to the point where a patient is uncomfortable or, to the extent that perhaps the joint would be damaged more, but it's just enough to see if, to a reasonable degree, what the veteran's joint movement is.
There are a lot of assumptions in what you just said, and the argument that you made originally, as I understood it, was that passive testing was required because at some point you would produce pain, and there has to be a conclusion about what point that is. Yeah. And there's no standard here that we can apply to figure out how far that or what point that would be. So
that's
I'm
right.
having
yeah.
difficulty accepting just your statement without some medical evidence of that.
Yes, sir. And I would agree. Certainly, I did not intend to imply that passive range of motion testing would necessarily produce pain. I was just merely highlighting, or I respectfully disagree with opposing counsel that if there's no pain during active range of motion, it necessarily follows that passive range of motion could not possibly produce pain. And oh, I'm sorry, Judge Bartley. And just to reiterate, the board has already made a favorable finding that the veteran does experience actually painful joints, which is consistent with the plain language of Section 4.59.
Thank you very much. The case is submitted. Court will greet counsel.
All rise.